This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
There's been a lot of speculation about the toll Russia's Ukraine war is having on the global economy, so we're digging into the latest numbers. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Recession, stagflation, cost of living crisis, these words have been flying around in various forecasts since Russia invaded Ukraine more than 100 days ago. Just this hour, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that's the OECD, released its latest figures this hour. It sees global growth slowing by 1.5 percentage points to 3% and inflation as high as 9% in some of its 38 member countries. That is twice what was previously forecast. But there are reasons to be optimistic, as the organization's chief economist, Laurence Boone, told me.
In the wake of the pandemic, we've been having very high growth all over the world, if you remember, in 2021, and a global growth of 3% is still very healthy. Employment is high, unemployment rates are low. But that is true that we have inflation higher than expected for a while and more persistent. Having said that, you know, the Russian war is obviously sending energy market into turmoil, that's pushing pressure on prices, but we don't expect this pressure to continue rising. So that means we will see inflation decelerating over the course of 2023.
What countries, what areas are most vulnerable right now?
Especially in Africa and Middle East, because there a lot of countries depend for their basic food, for cereals, on Russia and Ukraine exports. And on top of this, prices have been skyrocketing. And that's calling for a developed economy to actually help transport this food, to avoid putting trade barriers, to ensure the logistics, and if necessary, to increase aid to this country and to make sure that they get the food at affordable prices.
And as we speak today, Turkey is trying to facilitate some of that, meeting with Russia's foreign minister about trying to get grain out of Ukraine and into some of the countries that need it. How do you look at that?
One super important thing to keep in mind is that there is today enough food to feed everyone around the world. There's enough food. There's been enough production. So, yeah, the big issue is to bring it and bring a huge part of it out of Russia and Ukraine to those countries. Every effort to make that happen is going to be helpful.
Laurence Boone, the chief economist at the OECD, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Victoria.
Well, an update on those talks in Turkey today. As I mentioned there, Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu has been hosting his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. High on their agenda is facilitating grain export from Ukraine. Mr. Lavrov continued to deny the war is causing a global food crisis. That's an assertion the head of the European Council this week has dismissed as a web of lies. Still, Mr. Cavusoglu says the Turkish government is supportive of a UN proposal that could enable grain exports by sea to resume. His words have been voiced over here.
There are multiple ideas in place, and we know that the United Nations has a plan which includes the supervision of vessels. So between Ukraine, the Russian Federation and Turkey, we can establish a mechanism and establish a collaboration. So this is one possible plan. We think that this plan is feasible and it can be implemented. Of course, both countries, Ukraine and the Russian Federation, should be on board, and we can host a meeting in Istanbul to discuss the details.
That's Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu there. As we check the numbers now, there are more hard numbers on the state of the global economy. The 19-country Eurozone economy grew 0.6% in the first quarter this year. That's double initial estimates, bringing its annual growth rate to 5.4%. But that's doing little to push stock markets in the region higher, where a profit warning from Credit Suisse is today weighing on banking sector sentiment. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index is down about 0.3% at this hour. The rising cost of living is top of mind in Australia, where state, territory, and federal government ministers have met today for crisis talks to discuss the worsening natural gas crisis there. Prices have soared by up to 400%, but they'd be even higher if regulators hadn't intervened to impose price caps, as the BBC's Phil Mercer explains from Sydney.
Well, there's a combination of domestic and global pressures at play here. The war in Ukraine has increased demand for fossil fuels. Recently, we've had a cold snap in eastern Australia that's put huge stress on the electricity system for heating. This follows on from very serious flooding in eastern Australia in the early parts of 2022. There's also been problems with output from aging coal-fired power stations in Australia. The new government is blaming the old one for inaction when it comes to energy policy over recent years. And the Treasurer is a man called Jim Chalmers, and he says that the gas supply crisis in Australia is down to what he calls a perfect storm of conditions.
Some of the generators are offline. We've had some flooding. We've got some international difficulties, of course. But sitting over the top of that is the cost and consequences of almost a decade now of energy policy chaos. And what we want to do by implementing our Powering Australia plan is to introduce some certainty and some resilience into the energy markets.
So, Phil, what can Australia do to ease this gas crisis and bring bills down? Because this is a problem that we're seeing not just in Australia, but in countries all over the world.
Well, we're seeing a meeting today of political leaders from the states, the territories, and the federal government. And I think the message coming out of that meeting is that there is no easy or quick solution to this gas shortage here in Australia. The way to avoid gas shortages, according to the new government, is to boost and accelerate Australia's transition to clean energy. But that will take time. This is a country that still relies on coal and gas for the vast majority of its electricity.
The BBC's Phil Mercer for us in Sydney. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thanks, Victoria.
And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.